in, start your engines.
Tune up your motorsports knowledge. Power Up Motorsports Channel.
No, he didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
This is Pit Pass USA, the fastest auto racing location on the internet, with the latest news, the best interviews, and our own brand of commentary. Here's your host, Larry Henry.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Pit Pass USA. We are coming to you from the frozen tundra of Detroit, Michigan, or the suburbs thereof. I say frozen tundra. It was in, around 40 degrees this morning. It didn't get much above 50. It's supposed to stay like that all week. Way too early for that kind of thing. And when temperatures start going that way, you know, racing season is about to come to an end. And tonight I'm going to talk to three different drivers that are going for championships in their respective final race of the season in their series. I'll be talking with Indianapolis 500 winner Scott Dixon, leading the Indy cars. Patrick Long from Flying Lizards, he's leading a GT2 in the American Le Mans Series. John Fogarty, who's leading Daytona Prototypes in the Grand-Am Rolex. And then we're going to talk to a gentleman who does air racing, Smokey Young, tonight. I'll talk to him about Formula One air racing. So we've got three guys going for championships at a little air racing, too, and it's on ovals, which is going to be very interesting at the end of the program tonight. So you definitely want to stick around for tonight's program. This past weekend, the Petit Le Mans was run, kind of at Road America. The American Le Mans Series was holding that down at Road Atlanta. And fortunately, if you've been watching the weather, you know Atlanta's got a ton of rain in the state of Georgia, and the rains came back again during the Petit Le Mans. Unfortunately, they didn't get to run to conclusion, which kind of hampered my guest upcoming, Patrick Long, who drives for the Flying Lizards. He was hoping to wrap up the GT2 championship, but Patrick, unfortunately, the rain gods did not smile on you. And now you got to go to Laguna Seca to wrap up the title.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty tough timing, Larry. We had a great race car that day in the dry, in the wet. The race started in light conditions of rain, and we were very competitive. And then once it dried out, we went straight to the front, and we were leading there for quite a while just before the rains came. Unfortunately, with the jumping into pit lane and taking wet tires, the way that the field unfolded just before they had to actually red flag the race was just kind of a luck of the draw amongst the top six cars. So unfortunately, our closest rivals ended up at the front of that pack, and we ended up fifth out of six cars. So it was a tough pill to swallow, and we were hoping to get back out there and finish the second half of the race. But I know that the series had to make a judgment call based on, you know, so many teams from all over the world being there to race on Saturday, and certainly there was too much standing water on the racetrack to get out there, especially with the prototypes and how low their ride heights are. They just can't drive on much standing water.
Yeah, and especially with the LMP1s, LMP2s, I mean, they're not closed body, and I've never quite understood why a driver wants to be out there in the rain with that pouring in and the electronics that you have, and in a downpour, which was just, you just had deluges down there in Georgia.
Yeah, well, thank goodness for rubber tires to ground them out. But no, it's actually not too bad. Last year I drove the LMP2 car for Penske, and in the rain you're going so quick that the water doesn't have a chance to really, you know, compile inside the car, but you certainly have a little bit of a visibility issue. But in the GT cars as well, with the windshield, you know, fogging becomes an issue, and certainly if you get any oil on the windshield when it's dry and then it becomes wet and you need to turn your windshield wipers on, it gets pretty sticky, for lack of a better phrase. But certainly all the elements of sports car racing, whether it's rain or snow, we usually can make it. But, man, the rain that everybody's read about and, or seen on the news or endured in the Atlanta area, everybody knows how much there actually was. And I can't remember the days of it coming down that hard since I lived in the UK and raced over in England.
Talking with Patrick Long, who is the co-driver of the number 45 Flying Lizards Motorsports Porsche 911 in the GT2 class in the American Le Mans Series, coming off the Petit Le Mans, which was very petite because of the rain showers, red flagging it before it's 6 hours or 1,000 miles in distance over the weekend. But you are set up, Patrick, to still win the championship. You've got a 19-point advantage, I believe, going to Laguna Seca Mazda Raceway, which is just a beautiful race course out in Monterey, California. And the most anybody can get is 25. So it looks like as long as you finish, you're going to get the title. Is that the way it's going to work?
Yeah, the scenario is that I believe we have to finish 10th place in class. So really, we just have to have a safe day and stay out of trouble. The unfortunate thing is there's so much competition that's come into the American Le Mans Series in the last few races, especially in GT2. We've got the addition of the factory Corvettes. The BMW factory cars with Ray Hall have really stepped up their game. And our ultimate rival, which will go to the shootout of the last race in a couple weeks here in Laguna, as you mentioned, is the Risi Ferrari. So it's kind of a United Nations of sports car factory teams, and we love that. You know, coming from the factory team of Porsche over in Stuttgart and racing with our best customer team in the U.S., which is the Flying Lizard Group out of Northern California, it's a great mixture of a lot of cultures, and there's huge competition. So we don't want to just, you know, go out and hit par on the final day. We want to go out and, you know, come out swinging, but we're really going to have to, you know, make proper decisions on when to take that move and stick it up the inside and whether to lean on the guy or not based on the championship, because that is the ultimate goal. You know, the guys have been working so hard at back in Vysok on this 911 RSR, and every year you have to evolve with the movement and the technology that this sport brings to the table. So it's certainly something that we want to take back home to Germany and show all the engineers and designers just what we've been trying to produce with the car they've given us. So we hope to get it closed up. I think that the lead that we have is pretty comfortable, but it's that eerie feeling where you don't have to go out and really race, and you sometimes can get caught up in other people's mistakes when you're just being conservative like that.
Patrick, you talked about the competition in GT2, of course, the Risi Group, the Ferraris. You mentioned the Corvettes. They've gone from GT1 to GT2, and of course, both of those Corvettes could win. They've already won a race after jumping to GT2. Ray Hall's done a great job with the BMWs. They've won. They won a Road America earlier this year. Now, Paul Gentilozzi, he's got a one-car effort with Jaguar that's come into the GT2 classification. That class seems to be just growing and expanding, and the competition might be the best in the world in sports car racing.
Certainly, and we're excited because this is a tough economical climate, as everybody knows. But there's so many things that are so innovative and that are working for car companies to promote their latest spec technology. You know, the American Le Mans Series is really lending itself to being a green racing series. With that, these car manufacturers are bringing their latest technology and testing it out in such harsh environments like endurance races. You've got a lot of European teams that are looking to show off and get manufacturers representation, and so they want to come to where the most competition is. So really, the tides have turned. It was a little bit of a dry spell in the beginning of the year. We didn't have a huge car count, but now we've got, you know, Peugeot coming over from France, and we've got, you know, the Drayson team coming from England, and so it's really exciting heading into the final round, and we're looking forward to what comes for next year. But certainly with all the controversy and crazy things going on in Formula One, maybe we can lure a few more manufacturers to come race with us next year.
Patrick, what would winning the GT2 class mean for you? I mean, you have already such a storied career.
It means a lot, and it goes back to what we were just talking about. You know, titles and trophies and wins are huge, but when you know how much competition you're up against, that's what sweetens the pot, and certainly this year has been, in my opinion, the most competition in this class since the series inception over 10 years ago. So I think this will be the biggest feather in my cap as far as championships go, and certainly it would be nice to finish with a win in Laguna Seca. I'm a Southern California boy, so I have a lot of family and friends that will be coming up for the race. But again, we want to race for wins because I think that's what has got us the championship lead. We've won 5 out of the first 6 of this year, and we really have to strive for that because that's what makes everybody completely focused and just gelling together. So we look forward to getting down there. It's going to be great running 4 hours. Laguna has had a lot of updates to their racetrack, and it's made some of it better for us and some of it a little bit more of a struggle as far as us, the sports car racers. There's a lot of sand and gravel out there, so it protects the motorcycle racers when they come in for the USGP, but it makes it tough for a sports car. If you get off, you're stuck. So it's certainly going to be challenging for the drivers. We've got a fourth class, the GT3 Challenge class, that will be out there with us. So it keeps it so wild and mixed up in the America Le Mans Series. You have, you know, if there were any less than 10 passes per lap being overtaken, I would bet against that. So what I'm trying to say is there's always a lot of action, and that's what I love about this series.
Time with Patrick Long, co-driver of the number 45 Flying Lizards Motorsports Porsche 911 GT3 in the American Le Mans Series. They've got one race to go. He's leading in points. Should get the title, but you never know going to Laguna Seca. And you talked about chances of going off track. I always look at the very first pass, the start-finish line at the beginning of the race when you go down into the Mario Andretti hairpin. I have seen more cars in that huge gravel pit in my lifetime of watching racing at Laguna Seca than I think I can count.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a bottleneck. That's like being out on the, you know, the big highways and interstates, and it goes from four lanes to two, and everybody wants to get to their lane first. And, you know, it's tough. You're only thinking about the guy next to you, and you're really, really hauling the mail as you come down into turn two, the Andretti hairpin, and then it just completely funnels in bottlenecks. And I love that side of it because it's really an equalizer. Tracks that have that sort of, you know, narrow entry, you really have to get things sorted before you get down there. But certainly those are the types of corners where we're going to have to play it extra smart. But certainly over the last few years, there's been some championships decided right on that front straightaway coming over the rise and into turn two. So it's not the easiest place to go. Lots of blind corners and elevation changes, but that's what makes Laguna one of the fan favorites. You know, the corkscrew has to be the most infamous corner in at least on the West Coast as far as race tracks go. So we always look forward to getting down there. Our sponsors are eSilicone and ShoreTel, and they're both from the Northern California area, so we'll have lots of guests and lots of people to celebrate if we can wrap this championship up.
Patrick, I've got to ask you this question, and don't ask me why I decided I wanted to ask it. It's just one of those things. It's about your helmet, which people don't get to see, okay? It's neon green flames, blue background, yellow banded top. Why that design? Every driver has a story behind their helmet design. Why that for you?
Well, the origination of it was a design when I was 8 years old. My first helmet that I got when I was racing go-karts that was past the hand-me-down dirt bike helmets that I had from the past was had to go in for paint. And, you know, I sat down with my uncle and my dad, who were my biggest, you know, fans and my mechanics at that time, and we drew something up. And a lot of Irish blood in my family, and that's where the green came from. The flames was just something that I loved since I grew up around hot rods and sprint cars. And so we kind of combined that with the shamrock on the front for a little bit of Irish heritage, and there it was. Over the years, as I moved through Europe and I had different sponsors and different teams and rivaled teams that were in green, I was pushed a lot to change the color of my helmet. But I received a lot of advice from people who had made it in the sport as drivers, and they said, look, this is one thing you're going to have as an identity is your helmet. So don't get pushed around. If you have to change it for a year or two, always do what the sponsors need, but come back when you have the option to run your colors, and that will be your calling card. And it's changed in a little bit of tones, and I've made it as bright as possible because now that I'm in closed cockpit cars primarily, I want it to stand out. But it's always been bright green. I think if you think back to the past and the history of different drivers' helmets, Henri Pescarolo, who raced in France, had a bright green helmet, and you always knew it was him. You always knew Senna had a yellow helmet, or that Earnhardt had a black helmet, and that Nigel Mansell had a Union Jack looking helmet. So I think it's about being distinct and different, and sometimes it might be borderline offensive, but you'll always know it's me when I come up behind you in the car.
Yeah, it probably goes, that question probably came from my open wheels days as a broadcaster, because I could identify a driver without looking at the car by just looking at his helmet in the car and know who it was, and they're all individual. Hey, Patrick, I thank you for taking time out. Hopefully you've dried out from that weekend at Road Atlanta. Won't come down with any colds or anything like that, and look for a great outing at Laguna Seca here in a few days.
Hey, well, thanks for having me on the show, Larry. We're all dried out, and looking forward to California.
Patrick Long, driving for the Flying Lizards in the Porsche, got a 19-point lead, 25 points available. Looks like he's going to wrap up the championship, but you just never know. Anything can happen. Could be an early wreck. His day is done. It's very competitive in the GT2 classification, but that's going to be fun out of Laguna Seca. No better place. It is a great place out there. I mean, just being in Monterey alone is worth the price of admission. Well, that's one person that's going for a championship in the final race. How about IndyCar? They're going to be at Homestead Miami Speedway. And Scott Dixon, the 2008 Indy 500 winner, currently the points leader. We'll talk to Scott when we return to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry here on the Power Up Motorsports Channel. Power Up, your motorsports channel. See it, read it, feel it.
What's it like behind closed garage doors, where the decisions are made that change motorsports? You'll find out on The Race Reporters, because host Michael Knight has been there. He's a 40-year industry insider and award-winning writer and publicist. Each week, Knight brings together the country's top journalists and newsmakers, and their insights will make you a better race fan. The Race Reporters, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on the Power Up Channel.
Are you ready to go green?
You've asked, and we've heard you. Voice America presents the Green Talk Network. Environmental topics are at the forefront of our society, and the Green Talk Network is here to keep you up to date on the latest trends and new innovations for the eco-conscious lifestyle. We'll help promote a variety of ideas on the environment, from global warming issues to how you can become more eco-friendly in your daily activities. Be a part of the solution, not the problem. Visit the Green Talk Network page on voiceamerica.com and tune in to help spread the green.
Get ready for a show that breaks ground on the subject of women in motorsports and what it takes to dream, believe, achieve. Gas and Go with Allie O is all about the movement that is happening lightning fast in women's racing. You'll get a wide array of perspectives from the drivers to the fans, as well as what it takes to be a role model in a male-dominated sport. Join your host, professional driver Allie Owens, for Gas and Go with Allie O, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on the Power Up Motorsports Channel.
Want to join our pit crew? Are you a motorsports expert? Jump into the driver's seat and get your voice heard. To learn more about our broadcasting opportunities, contact us at 480-294-6417. That's 480-294-6417. Or email us at info@voiceamericanetwork.com. That's info@voiceamericanetwork.com. See it, breathe it, feel it.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA, with Larry Henry.
Welcome back, my next guest. Well, I was around when he had his very first IndyCar win. That was back in 2002 at 1 Mile Nazareth Speedway. Since that point in time, he's gone on to win the Indianapolis 500 and a two-time IndyCar champion. And he is just one race away from getting his third IndyCar championship, and that's Scott Dixon, who drives for Target Chip Ganassi Racing. Scott, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Glad to have you on board. It's watched you, of course, for a long time. Got to see that first win in person back in Nazareth. It seems so long ago, but you've progressed from there, obviously, quite a ways, winning the Indianapolis 500, two IndyCar championships, and now you're just one race away from doing it again for a third time.
Yeah, it's definitely, a lot has changed since then, and, you know, obviously got married, had a baby, and obviously about 10 years older than then, so, you know, we've definitely as a team, I think, with Target Chip Ganassi, achieved a lot over the years, and already had two championships and a lot of wins with the team, and going for a third is definitely what we want to try and accomplish, and hopefully if I can't do it, you know, I definitely would like Dario, my teammate, to go for it as well. I think going to be an exciting race. You know, the three of us split by, I think, 8 points, five back to Dario and then eight back to Ryan Briscoe. Everybody's going to be pushing for those three extra bonus points, one for the pole and two for most laps led.
Do you have a little bit of deja vu? I remember a couple of years ago, you went into the final race of the season leading Dario. At that time, you were on different teams. You were coming to the checkered flag, and you ran out of fuel.
Yeah, it's been it's definitely crazy to kind of almost go full circle again, but it's definitely totally different, as you know, with having him as a teammate opposed to when we were fighting for it in 2007. So, you know, maybe we can get a little bit back and hopefully we make it across the finish line this year with the right amount of fuel and not choke too early and let it all sort of, you know, go wayside. But you know, it's going to be tough. You know, I think at that point in 2007, it was only really Dario that we had to worry about. But, you know, this year we've obviously got Team Penske and Ryan Briscoe. And I'm sure Elio is going to come into the play as well to try and help Ryan. So it's definitely going to be a tough race. I think a lot of pressure on the three of us, probably going to be the toughest race that we've had all year, knowing that it's going to come down to the last lap, last corner.
You and Dario seem to have meshed very well as teammates this first time around with Targa Chip Ganassi Racing. You've won 5 times, he's won 4, and it seems like almost throughout the season it's been either you or he in the points lead. Now, Ryan Briscoe has been right there, don't get me wrong, but it seems that you two have been the two dominant going back and forth week in, week out.
Yeah, you know, I think more so towards the middle of the season. You know, for me, I don't think we could have started the season any worse. I think after, you know, the first two races, I was 19th in points or something. So we've had a lot of silly races where we've lost a lot of points. We've had a lot of bad races as far as the way that, what we've achieved out of it. You know, Iowa definitely rings a bell in places like that, and Kentucky as well. So it's been a very up-and-down year for my side of the team. It definitely hasn't been as consistent as 2008, but, you know, on any playing field, I think 2008 would be very tough to try and repeat. So, you know, I'm very grateful to obviously be in the situation that we are going into the last race, leading the championship. I just hope we can keep it that way. But, you know, obviously two very, very fierce competitors are very close, and they're going to be vying for the championship as well.
We're talking with Scott Dixon here on Pit Pass USA. The IndyCar season finale is coming up at Homestead Miami Speedway. In just over a week, he's leading his Targa Chip Ganassi teammate Dario Franchitti by 5 points. It's 12 back to Penske driver Ryan Briscoe. And Scott, you mentioned Elio Castroneves. He can't win the title this year, but he could play a factor. Now, I'd hate to think that Elio would go out there and try to block anyone to help Ryan Briscoe, but does that enter into your thinking at all?
Well, you know, I guess it would probably if the race was coming down to a Chicago or a Texas or places like that. But, you know, myself, Dario, and Briscoe actually just tested at Homestead on Friday. And as the track's progressed over the last 3 or 4 years from the last time it was resealed, it's definitely lost a lot of grip. And that makes the car, you know, move around a lot more. It becomes more mechanical opposed to just drag and speed. So, you know, it's going to be very tough, I think, to manipulate, maybe what you can do with some of the other competitors if you're Helio. But, you know, it's still going to be tough. Helio's going to do all that he can to try and push for the team. And I would do the same for Dario, and Dario would do the same for me. So, you know, I think we're just going to have to play it like we always do and try and go out and try and dominate and try and win.
When I look at the season ender at Homestead Miami Speedway, a great mile and a half, at least it has been for NASCAR. They put on great races there for their season ender. It just fits them for some reason. You talk about lack of grip for IndyCars. But to me, the wild card could be in that championship race, Newman-Haas-Lanigan. Suddenly, they are rolling like the Newman-Haas team that we used to know, that was always running up front. They're having consistent finishes, and right there in the top 5 between Graham Rahal and Oriel Servia. Could they be kind of a wild card in all that, playing with, you know, with the way the points are and how many points you get for first or second or third even, because they are running strong?
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, definitely Graham has been extremely quick just recently. I'm not sure who's driving the second car for Homestead. I think it might even be Alex Lloyd in that car. But, you know, they have definitely come on a lot better, I think, throughout the season, definitely on the shorter tracks like Milwaukee and places like that. So, you know, we'll just have to see how it plays out. But as you said, you know, I think the track has definitely become more mechanical dependent opposed to, you know, drag and downforce like it has been in the past. So, you know, I think there will definitely be a lot more players. I think, you know, Marco Andretti and TK, you got to look at last year, we're very, very fast at Homestead. So I know they're testing, I think today actually or tomorrow, and they're definitely going to have a great shot as well.
Well, we're talking with Scott Dixon, who drives for Targa Chip Ganassi in the IndyCar season, and he's got one race to go, leading the points over his teammate Dario Franchitti by 5. And Scott, you've been a busy guy the last few days. You talked about you were testing down at Homestead Miami Speedway, but you were also involved in, unfortunately, the ill-fated Petit Le Mans down at Road Atlanta over the weekend with all the rain that came down. You were shuttling back and forth between the two?
Yeah, it was a shame, you know, I think, especially for the fans, you know, because you obviously get a lot of people that camp out for that race too, and I think we'd been lucky throughout the week where it was meant to have rained and it never really did, but it came down on Saturday. It was pouring when I woke up. We had a bit of a clear patch there throughout the middle of the day, and then it just opened the skies up again and rained for, you know, a good another 4 or 5 hours. So that was frustrating, but yeah, we tested, Dario and myself tested Wednesday, Thursday, flew to Homestead, tested the IndyCar Friday, then came back Friday night and jumped on the cars, Saturday for Petit Le Mans. And I definitely feel bad for the team. Gilles had a knock, I think, from one of the field drivers in the field car there, and that pretty much ruined our day from the get-go. I think we fell down 14 laps there, and then I jumped in, and probably 20 laps later I kind of went off track and damaged the front of the car and probably lost another 10 laps. And halfway through the race, they cancelled it or red flagged it, and then 3 or 4 hours later they ended up cancelling the whole event. So definitely a tough day and not the way we want to see races run.
Even though it was a shortened race and you did have problems with Gilles Deferrin, who's got one more race to go and then he's going to retire again and become a team owner only, both in the American Le Mans Series, and he's talking about getting into the IndyCar Series too. Do you have fun doing that when you run over in sports car?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think it's definitely fun racing. I think when you're in the bigger cars, for sure, you're passing 8, 9 cars a lap sometimes, and it's a lot of fun. You've definitely got a huge compromise between trying to, you know, make the passes and speed of the other cars, and especially with the Acura, it's all about momentum, because the thing doesn't really have much power, especially compared to the Audi or the Peugeot, where they probably have another 150 horsepower, so... You know, it's tough racing, but it's fun racing, and I love doing endurance races. I love doing the 24-hour. I was, you know, very thankful to team up with Gilles and Simon again for Sebring, and then obviously for Petit just recently. So, you know, hopefully I can add those to my schedule next year as well and keep it going.
Scott, final question. How disappointed will you be when the smoke clears following the race October 10th at Homestead Miami Speedway, that you aren't the IndyCar champion? If you somehow you didn't win the championship, how disappointed would you be?
You'll have to ask me that after the race. we're going there and we're going to go all out. You know, we're going to try and lead every lap. We're going to try and get pole. And all I can say is hopefully one of the target cars are victorious and one of us is sitting on the podium for the championship. You know, I just hope it does come true. I think the team is definitely pushed very hard this year. We've had some mishaps, but those guys have never really, you know, given up, and for sure I'm not, and I'm sure Dario is not either.
I know Dario won't, having known him for as long as I have known you, and he'll go wheel to wheel with you and try to win it. He won't do anything, I don't think, stupid. I have one of those brain moments where I got to win this thing. He'll know what's on the line for the team, but I know he'll go just as hard against you as you will go against him to get the win and win the title, and that's what's going to make it fun down at Homestead Miami Speedway.
I can't wait. Thank you.
That is Scott Dixon. He is going for his third IndyCar title, Homestead Miami Speedway. Used to be like Miami, then it was Homestead Miami. I always still get it confused. I'm old school. But anyway, they'll be wrapping up the IndyCar season down there in a few days with Scott Dixon leading Dario Franchitti by 5 points. Their teammates a couple of years ago. It was Scott Dixon coming to the checkered flag. What was it? Chicagoland Speedway. Coming off the fourth turn. Going to win the championship. Ran out of fuel. Dario wound up the winner. Anything could happen, and don't count Ryan Briscoe out, so that's kind of cool, too. Well, next up, we're going to talk to another guy that's going for a championship in his final race, and that race is coming up in just a few days in the Grand-Am Rolex Series. John Fogarty drives for Gainsco in the Grand-Am Rolex Series. We'll talk to him when Pit Pass USA continues here on the Power Up Motorsports Channel. From IndyCar Racing to PowerBooks, to Formula One and NASCAR, you're listening to PowerUpChannel.com, your motorsports channel.
In 1977, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. The odds of that same boy winning the US Open twice? 1 in 1.2 billion. The odds of him having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. Ernie Else encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
It's the first and most successful show devoted to the history, passion, evolution, and culture of motorcycling. Over a decade in the making, America's premier motorcycle talk show. It's here. It's live. It's Open Road Radio. Join host Gina Woods, Dozer, Panhead Bobby Grant, Ideal Dave, and Sugar Bear for Open Road Radio. You never know who's going to stop by.
Hello, this is Jay Leno. You know, and after a hard day of being funny, I'd take my bike, go to Chicago, so I can listen to Open Road Radio.
It's everything for the cycle enthusiast. Grab yourself a cold one each week and get ready for a smooth ride. Open Road Radio, presented by National Cycle. Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Power Up, your motorsports channel.
Are you ready to go green?
You've asked and we've heard you. Voice America presents the Green Talk Network. Environmental topics are at the forefront of our society, and the Green Talk Network is here to keep you up to date on the latest trends and new innovations for the eco-conscious lifestyle. We'll help promote a variety of ideas on the environment, from global warming issues to how you can become more eco-friendly in your daily activities. Be a part of the solution, not the problem. Visit the Green Talk Network page on voiceamerica.com and tune in to help spread the green.
Everything motorsports. See it. Breathe it. Feel it. PowerUpChannel.com.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
The Grand Am Rolex Series is about to wrap up its season in a few days at Homestead Miami Speedway, and it is a great battle in the Daytona prototypes. Right now, the lead is 8 points over second, 10 points over third, and one of the co-drivers in the number 99 Gainsco machine joining me now, and that is John Fogarty. And John, it's been a great season. You lead the series with 4 wins, but it's not quite over yet.
Nope, no, not quite over at all. I think 4 guys in contention for the championship. 3 of us really, really tight up at the front. Us, the Ganassi guys, and the SunTrust car. So we got a lead. And we've had a great season, but the point structure and everything, and the way things are in Grand Am, and as competitive as it is, championship still definitely up for grabs going into Homestead October.
You had a great run out of Miller Motorsports Park in Utah. You qualified up front. You lead the most laps and you win the day, which has to give you momentum heading down to Homestead.
For sure. Yeah. The car's been quick and team's been executing really well. We felt pretty good about Miller. You know, there's a lot of corners, obviously. The majority of that track you spend turning, which is good for us. We're definitely a handling package. Homestead, not so much. Long straightaways, all, what few corners there are pretty slow in first gear corners. So really a motor and a horsepower track. GM, the guys at GM and Bob Cronin and TRD, our engine builder, they're working hard to give us something that's going to give us an advantage at that track.
Yeah, how much does that change for you going to a place like Homestead Miami Speedway? Of course, that's a 1.5 mile oval. You use a lot of the oval for the road course configuration, but I know the road course on the inside, and it's not completely as twisty or high speed turns as some of the courses have.
Yeah. Like I said, you come out onto the banking basically out of the oval turn two, and we drive through NASCAR 3 and 4, almost down the whole front straightaway, and then come off, before we turn into what would be NASCAR Turn 1. And then you have a series of first gear corners. It's slippery, and it's hard to put the power down. So it's about getting between the corners, getting that done as quickly as possible. So it's a demanding track. From that perspective, we would prefer something a little more technical and traditional, but it is what it is. We've known it's been that way for a long time, so it's been on our minds, and
we wanted to come there with a points advantage because we don't necessarily think it's our strongest place.
John, it's always been a battle the last few years between the 99 team, your team with Bob Stallings, and the Chip Ganassi team with Scott Pruitt and Mimo Rojas. But this year, you kind of add in the number 10 Sun Trust Machine with Max Angelelli and Brian Frizzell. Does that shake things up a little bit where in the past it looked like a two-car race, and now it's at least a three and possibly a four-car race that you've really got to be on to win this thing?
Yeah, it definitely mixes it up. You know, when you only have one car to deal with, you can kind of manage your position relative to them during the race and race strategy by covering essentially what they do as far as pit stops go. Now we have two guys to think about. So, you know, if we cover the 10 car and the 01 car decides to do something a little bit different, maybe take a gamble, yeah, we've covered the 01 car, but if the or the 10 car, but now the 01 car could get a lucky break, and it's tough. So I think our best strategy then in this situation is try to control the race and lead and make them make those choices. So we're hoping we can do that. You know, we're hoping we have another weekend like we did this last one at Salt Lake. So it's tough having three guys in it and all really good teams and good drivers. So it's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. I was at the race down at Daytona in July because I was part of the public address group for July at Daytona. And it was an exciting race. And maybe those that aren't that familiar with the Grand-Am Rolex Series, you actually have two classifications out on the racetrack at the same time. And, of course, the other cars, not the Daytona prototypes, are going a little slower. And you get in traffic a lot, and they could really play a key factor in how this comes out.
They can. You know, it's, yeah, man, it's the GT cars, you know, they really do contribute to the closeness of the racing. But at the same time, they can make or break your weekend, and in that way, they can also make and break your championship. So, you know, you hope that you get the lucky breaks or that it all evens out relative to catching those guys in the corners. And I just hope everybody has their eyes and ears open to their spotters when they let them know that leaders are coming through, because it makes it interesting, but at the same time it can be very frustrating as a driver.
We're talking with John Fogarty here. He's a co-driver with Alex Gurney in the number 99 Gainsco machine for Bob Stallings in the Grand-Am Rolex Series, and they're getting ready for their season finale in Homestead Miami Speedway. Right now they lead the second-place Sun Trust car by 8 points, and Scott Pruitt and the Chip Ganassi squad by 10. And John, you and Alex Gurney now have been teammates for how many years?
We've been full-time now. This will be our third full season, and then half of 2006, essentially. Which is awesome. You know, the whole time it's been Alex and I, and Gainsco Auto Insurance is our sponsor, and a really consistent crew and team, and I couldn't ask for a better situation.
John, it sounds like you got a young driver there with you.
Yeah, I got my daughter with me here. She's going to be one in about a week, and my wife's out running some errands, so I'm keeping my eye on her. And I got my son, who's 3 and a half, and he's at school. So.
Yeah, sometimes we forget racers are real people, too.
Yeah, you know, my teammate Alex Gurney just had a baby 2 days before that last weekend in Salt Lake, so he's got his hands full with two now as well.
And what's it like? Does the family go with you to the races pretty much, or do the kids stay at home?
Everyone stays at home. I mean, I think a lot of people, as a driver, we love what we do, and we would never want to be doing anything else in the world, but at the same time, it's very much still a working environment, and to us, it's a serious job that that demands 100% of our focus and attention. So my preference is to leave the family at home and not mix work and the family. They'll watch on TV, and I try to say hello to them, and that's about it. But we got our hands full on a race weekend, so having a couple kids around would probably not be the best.
Yeah, and people don't realize what the schedule's like. I've broadcast races around the world, and people, you got to go to Australia, you got to go to Brazil, you got to go here. And I said, yeah, and I got up at 5:30 in the morning. I was at the racetrack. I was there till 6, and someplace it was 105 degrees all day long. And,
yep.
You know, and it's not as glamorous as it sounds.
It's not. It's not. I mean, it's like I said, it's the best job in the world. But yeah, the glam factor is actually a lot less than probably what people imagine, and it's a ton of work. And you know, the crew guys, and I mean, as a driver, I think that we have it very easy relative to the rest of the guys, and I can't say enough about our crew and the Gainesco team and the effort they put in, not only at the track, but also, you know, they immediately go back from the track a lot of times straight back to the shop and work straight through. And those guys have families and make a lot of sacrifices. And certainly, I think those guys are the unsung heroes.
Well, it could all pay off here in just a few days with the championship. And I know that's the only thing you want when that checkered flag finally falls. And the checkered flag's got to fall. We've seen too many times run out of fuel or something happen on the final lap. I remember when your teammate Alex Gurney got beat by Scott Pruett at Daytona a year ago in July, going off at turn four.
Yeah.
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen. And you know, the Rolex Series, and it's just unbelievably competitive. And you know, we have a mix of engine manufacturers and now chassis in the hunt for the championship. And you know, each package has its strengths here and there. And it's just a great mix that makes for great racing. So I hope a lot of people tune in. I'm sure it'll be a good race.
Well, John, thank you, and best of luck to you and Alex.
Thank you very much.
That is John Fogarty, the 99 Gainesco machine. Bob Stallings, the owner. They're going for the championship. Daytona Prototypes Grand Am Rolex Series coming up at a Homestead Miami Speedway. They'll run the road course there. And, of course, that's the same racetrack where IndyCar wraps up their season with their championship decided. And, of course, for championship weekend for NASCAR to wrap up all three of their series for NASCAR the weekend before Thanksgiving. So kind of a busy place now. Where's places to go? Okay, the racetrack is out in the middle of nowhere. It's the last bastion of civilization there before you go down into the Keys. But you're near Miami. So there is an upside to all of that when you go down there, and especially when you're, like I said at the beginning of the program, when you're in the frozen tundra of the Detroit, Michigan area where it's getting down to, they're talking it maybe into the 30s tonight, which is a little crazy for this time of year. Anyway, racing always keeps you warm, and we're going to turn our attention to a different form of racing, up in the air. Okay, you've seen some of that stuff, but this is oval racing in the air, Formula One. Air racing. We're going to talk to Smokey Young when we return to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry here on the Power Up Motorsports Channel.
You are on the inside track of motorsports drivers and teams. PowerUpChannel.com.
Are you ready to learn all about NASCAR from an insider's perspective? Join Eddie DeHaan every week for the NASCAR Insider. It's an interactive look at the world of NASCAR from the drivers to the crew chiefs. You'll hear from top-flight NASCAR guests that the other shows only wish they could have. Hear about last week's recap, this week's news, and more. Call in to interact with Eddie and his guests every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on the Power Up Motorsports Channel.
Hi, I can't come to the phone right now because I'm abusing my children, not just verbally, but physically. I'll get back to you.
If only child abuse was this easy to recognize. If you even suspect abuse, call Child Help at 1-800-4-A-CHILD or visit childhelp.org. We've helped millions of people help millions of children. All calls are anonymous and confidential, so call 1-800-4-A-CHILD or visit childhelp.org. Child Help. Trust your instincts. Brought to you by Child Help and the Ad Council.
Get ready for a show that breaks ground on the subject of women in motorsports and what it takes to dream, believe, achieve. Gas and Go with Allie O is all about the movement that is happening lightning fast in women's racing. You'll get a wide array of perspectives from the drivers to the fans, as well as what it takes to be a role model in a male-dominated sport. Join your host, professional driver Allie Owens, for Gas and Go with Allie O, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on the Power Up Motorsports Channel.
Listen for The Right Turn with J.J. O'Malley. It's an insider's look at America's fastest-growing motorsports series, the Grand Am Rolex Sports Car Series, presented by Crown Royal Cask Number 16. You'll hear about what happened last weekend and get a preview of what's coming up next. From the Rolex 24 at Daytona
through Watkins Glen International, Mid-Ohio, Laguna Seca, right up to the championship at Homestead Miami Speedway. The Right Turn with J.J. O'Malley, broadcast live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on the Power Up Motorsports Channel. The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America Business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business talk.
Power up with your favorite motorsport. You're listening to PowerUpChannel.com. See it, breathe it, feel it.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA, with Larry Henry.
Welcome back to Pit Pass USA. One of the things I love to do on this program is to expose you to more than just the mainstream racing, a NASCAR, an IndyCar, Grand Am, American Le Mans Series. Maybe we'll talk USAC. Maybe we'll talk a Formula Atlantic. Well, this time around, we're going to go a little farther. How about Formula One air racing? And a gentleman that knows a lot about that because he was the 2003 Rookie of the Year. Join me now. And that's Smokey Young. Smokey, welcome.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
Okay, let's tell people what Formula One air racing is.
Formula One air racing is closed course, pylon air racing. It's done, of course, as air racing, it's done in aircraft. And just like a Formula One race car, a Formula One racing plane has to meet a design formula. They're required to have a minimum of 66 square feet of wing area, fixed pitch propeller made either of composites or wood, fixed main landing gear, and then a 200 cubic inch horizontally opposed air-cooled engine. So that's our basic design formula. Of course, if you get into our technical rules, it becomes quite involved. But that's it in a nutshell. And what we do in a Formula One air race, and right now our primary venue is the Reno Air Races, the National Championship Air Races in Reno, Nevada, which, by the way, I just returned from last week. What we do is we launch 8 airplanes at once from the runway, and we enter the course, which is a 3.11-mile oval that is marked by pylons. The pylons are actually poles with large drums on top of them. There are 6 pylons that define the oval course, and the 8 airplanes go out there, and we weigh against each other with speeds getting up close to 255 miles per hour.
So this is really an oval race.
Yes, it is, and one of the really exciting things about it, besides the fact that there's 8 airplanes out there going wingtip to wingtip, trying to pass each other just like in any other motorsport, we're seldom more than 50 to 75 feet above the ground. So this is low-altitude, high-speed, high-stakes racing. And in recent years, whenever somebody mentions air racing, there's a venue that tends to come to mind. And all I'll say about Formula Air Racing is this is racing, no bull. This isn't a single airplane racing against a clock through inflatable pylons. This is 8 of the best pilots in the world, 50 feet above the ground, racing each other around pylons. And if you hit them, they don't deflate. They rip the wing off your airplane.
Well, I was going to mention about that other racing series because they've been in the Detroit area running on the Detroit River the last 2 years. And I still haven't figured out all the rules because if you get above a certain height on the pylon, you get a penalty. And I mean, it's exciting, but you sit there and go, okay, they ran the course and that's it. But you guys are actually, you're racing like you would on any oval like NASCAR, IndyCar, USAC, whatever. You've got 8 guys side by side coming to the start-finish line, and you're off to the races.
That's correct. 8 of us out there at once, and it's multiple heats. So if you go out to the Reno Air Races, you're going to see 4 days of this type of racing going on, race after race after race, different classes. Again, I'm in the Formula One classes. but lots of great racing out there.
Quickly, I want to talk about your background. Now, you're a former United States Air Force officer, and do you fly the stealth bomber, the F-111?
No, well, I flew the F-111, but the F-111 wasn't the stealth bomber. The F-111 was actually the first operational aircraft with variable geometry of movable wings, and I flew that airplane for about 10 years in the Air Force. I was an instructor pilot, and it was a great machine, and imagine this, our mission was low altitude, high speed, day, night, all weather interdiction, attack and bombing. So I got a real taste for flying low and flying real, real fast in formation with other airplanes at a young age. I was flying that thing at about the age of 23. So I did that. After the Air Force, I went to fly for an airline. And flew airliners, enjoyed it, but something was missing. So in 2003, I started getting into air racing. As you mentioned at the beginning of the show, I was Rookie of the Year for Formula One in 2003. I've raced at Reno since then. Actually, I came in fourth in the Gold Championship race this year at Reno. About 2 years ago, branched out into doing some racing in Europe in aerobatic airplanes. As a matter of fact, prior to starting the interview with you, I was working on some proposals to go over to United Arab Emirates and do some competition flying over there in my other airplane, which is an extra 300, an aerobatic airplane. So kind of left the airline in 2004 and worked my way into full-time racing and aerobatic air show type of flying.
Smokey, are you an adrenaline junkie?
I like excitement. I got a saying I really enjoy, and that is the nice thing about living life on the edge is the view is phenomenal.
Oh, it's got to be in the airplane and going up there and the speed and what you do and the people that are involved in the sport. It's like anything in auto racing. You love it. You love going fast. You feel the need for speed, and what you're doing so close to the ground has to be exciting. How can people find out more information, not only about Formula One air racing, but about you in particular?
Well, we have a website. It's www.flyairracing, S-L-Y, and then airracing, all one word, .com. So that'll tell you about the racing I'm doing. I'd also encourage people to get on to www.airrace.org, and that's the website for the National Championship Air Races in Reno, Nevada. IF1 Air Racing has its own website, www.if1airracing.com. That's another good source of information. There's a lot of videos on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and type in Fly Air Racing, Aero GP, or Smokey Young, you'll get some really great video footage. Both of my airplanes have cameras at various locations around the airframe, and we've gotten some good video on YouTube and done some good promotion through that venue.
Well, Smokey, I thank you for taking time out of what sounds like an extremely busy schedule to talk with me at slower than normal speeds about what you do, and hopefully some fans will get turned on to Formula One air racing now.
Well, Larry, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this great sport. I love it, and my enthusiasm for it, I hope, is infectious, and we can get some more fans out there through your radio show.
That is Smokey Young, Formula One Air Racing. See, you didn't know much about that, did you? You do now, and if you're one of those that are out west when they do the Reno Air Races, I got to do that next year. I got to go and see that next year. I think I can wrangle my way into that, but that would be kind of fun to do. Well, hopefully you enjoyed the program tonight. If so, or maybe if you didn't, I'd like to hear from you. All you have to do is send me an email, LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com, LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. You can also go to our Facebook fan page, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. I usually post there who the guests are for the upcoming show and some other little notes from time to time. Love to have you there. I'm going to be adding some things to that as we go along, still in the developmental stages, but I do get the guests. It's like right now, I have no clue who my guests are going to be next week. I'll probably know in the next day or two, but I have no clue at this point in time. Also, you can find me on Twitter, @PitPassUSA. I'm there. I tweet. I even tweeted during the show here tonight. Not all the time, but occasionally I would send out little notes. And also you can check out my blog from time to time. It's www.exhaustfumes.wordpress.com. And I do a few notes from there. I'd like to thank you for listening tonight. I'd like to thank my guests, Scott Dixon, Patrick Long, John Fogarty, Smokey Young. I definitely want to thank you for listening. Don't forget to tell your friends and neighbors about the show. If you missed tonight's show, you might be listening right now in the archives. Don't forget you can also subscribe at iTunes. And be back next Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific, for the next edition of Pit Pass USA. Have a great week. Take it a race this weekend. Good night.
Do it for this week. Time to get ready for another great week of racing to talk about next time on Pit Pass. Tune in next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for another fast-paced 200-mile-per-hour edition of Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry on Power Up, your motorsports channel.
From IndyCar Racing to PowerBooks, to Formula One and NASCAR, you're listening to PowerUpChannel.com, your motorsports channel.